Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Lieutenant Governor, the stress of the job?
What? Stress of the job? Really?
Wake up every day. How's Governor Wolf doing? Good. All right. Let's go to the golf course. I mean, you want stress? You want to know what stress is? Stress is trying to sell digital media. That's
softball. Pure softball.
That's stress.
Volleyball. You're in the front row, 7 feet tall.
Come on. Come on, man. Hey, now, trying to sell digital media. That's stress. All right. You wonder why the suit goes around the radio station, you know, and people get a little uncomfortable as to what he's going to say next. It's because of the stress of selling digital media.
Over under, how many buys will he create 2 weeks from tomorrow during the golf tournament?
Oh.
How many phone calls will he take during his time?
Well, I mean, in terms of actual buys, I mean, the actual buys will be zero. So that's easy. But the number of times he's on the phone acting like he is doing something.
I'll set the over-under at 5. That may be low.
Well, I don't know. I would say 8 or 9.
Mm.
Oh, I've got to take this call. Now, it's not bothersome because we don't need his shot. But, I mean, it's still... It's not like he's the A player in the group and everybody's like, come on, get off the phone. We need you to chip here. I mean, come on. Okay, now that becomes a problem when you're playing in a scramble and your A player is kind of like, hold on a second here, hold the phone. Hits the shot, we're 10 feet away, we might take the phone back with it. Okay, that's kind of magical and infuriating all at the same time. How can you do that? Okay. This is not one of those cases.
Well, it's like all those years you'd watch American Idol and you just wait for Seacrest to say, after the break.
After the
call.
Right. Now, in the suit's case, we encourage him on certain shots to take calls. Well, don't you need my driver? No, we really don't. No, we're good. Here, make a sale. You're saying 5. I'm going to say 8. 8 times he's on the cell phone in 18 holes.
Yeah, I'm probably a little conservative, but
it's like a 4.5 hour round, right? Somewhere in there. So let's just say conservatively, it's a 4 hour round.
Yeah, 5 could be way low then.
So if he takes 5, so you got what, 240 minutes. So you're saying he would take a call.
Yeah, I'm just thinking calls. I'm not thinking calls and texts. I'm just thinking just calls.
You're saying he'd have a call every 45 minutes, right?
Yeah, if you're talking pushing 4.5 hours, yeah, that could be way low.
I say 8 because there'll be a lot of those like where he's acting like he's solving problems. That was last year's thing. Remember all the calls he took last? I mean, we kid a lot about a lot of stuff, okay? This part I want to preface by saying we are not kidding about this part. All right?
This is true.
Right? Okay? We are not kidding about this part. Remember how many calls in the round that he either made or took last year because, quote, he was putting out fires. I mean, it was, I'm not kidding. There was one point where it was, must have been 4 or 5 holes in a row. Then he went like 3 or 4, didn't. And then all of a sudden, another spurt of like 4 or 5 holes in a row. And I'm like, you know, and Dave Ritchie's like, what are you doing? He says, I'm trying to come out here, relax, and play golf. He goes, I've got a lot of fires to put out. And I'm going, that's fine. It's a radio station. What? I can't wait for goodness. Are we still on the air? All right. after that,
we're good.
Hey, you really are now on the highway to heaven, okay? At that point, you're in good shape, okay? There's certain basics that have to happen, okay? Hey, is the transmitter and everything in the tower working? Yes, we're good. we can figure out the other stuff later. And then now, so it's, but yeah, last year he was on the phone constantly the entire round. Constantly. Then he had a little health scare on the ninth hole. That scared me. That scared me when that happened. A little health scare out there, which eventually he had to have taken care of. But it didn't stop him from getting to the 10th hole and then getting back on the phone again. You got to be able to find some time and just go out and relax. I mean, how many times have you ever seen me on the phone on the golf course? Never. Let me give you one quick story. Jack Ham and I are at practice on Friday night. They scrimmaged on Friday night. So we're watching this. And all of a sudden it gets lengthy into it. And Jack looks over. He's, hey, Steve, what time is it? I said, Jack, I don't know. I don't have my phone with me. He goes, oh, my God. He says, I don't have my phone either. He starts laughing. He says, what are the odds that two guys in 2017 would be standing and neither one would have a phone? He says, this is great. He says, we're actually talking to each other. I said, yes, I know. All right, play-by-play call of the day. Stanley Cup last night. The Toronto Maple Leafs electrify the Air Canada Center.
Marner lets it go, goes to Bozak, onto the boards and back to the point. It comes to Morgan Rielly. Dershowitz on the far side for Bozak. Henry Pass scores! Scores! Tyler Bozak! Holy mackinaw, the Leafs have won it!
That was incredible. And what they did in Nashville last night was incredible. You know, the crowds in both those places may be different. How about Carrie Underwood? She sang the national anthem last night in Nashville, too. Surprised her husband. How about that? All right. Let's bring in Dave Brugler now to talk about the NFL draft. Dave, welcome. Great to have you with us. What are you seeing with this thing?
It's tough because you're talking about a brand new regime. First-year head coach, first-year general manager, and it really doesn't matter who's on the roster right now because you know these new decision makers aren't tied to the players currently on the roster. It doesn't matter that the 49ers have gone defensive line in the last 2 years, right, or that they've invested high picks at the safety position. I think defensive line, safety, even quarterback is on the board, and you can't rule those positions out. I lean towards Solomon Thomas, the defensive end from Stanford, a player who can play inside, can play outside, powerful hands, quick. Very talking about the leadership, the intangibles, the coaches are going to love him. For the first pick of a brand new regime, I don't think you can go wrong with a Solomon Thomas. Now, is he traditionally what you look for in a number two overall pick? Not necessarily. I don't think he has that type of star power, but I'm not sure that's maybe what you should be looking for. I think you should be looking for a darn good football player that's going to make your team better, and that's Solomon Thomas.
When you do your mock drafts, Dane, do you sit there and give your opinion as to what they should do, or do you try to think along with the player personnel people as to what you think they're going to do?
It's never about what I'm going to do. I don't think fans care what I would do if I was the 49ers. they want to know who the 49ers might actually do, and that's based on, you know, my talking to people around the league.
Sure.
And not always the 49ers, but talking to, you know, another team and who they think the 49ers are going to take. And so mock drafts are all about what I hear and what I'm told and kind of making, you know, weeding through the different clues that you're given and trying to connect those dots.
The Cleveland Browns, of course, have the first overall pick. Then they also pick again at 12. When you look at their situation, now your opinion now, not about your mock, you know, mm-hmm. what other people told you, your opinion. Do you think the Browns need to take as many, quote, football players as possible, or does one of those picks would then there have to be a quarterback?
If they believe that there's a quarterback willing to, or that's capable of helping them compete for the division, then I think they absolutely need to pull the trigger. Now, I am a believer in Mitchell Trubisky. I do think that he can be a long-term starter in this league.
That's interesting. Not everybody feels that way. Why do you feel that he can be?
I don't see a fatal flaw. I don't see something that is going to stop him. Now, he has only 13 games as a starter. He doesn't have the sample size that ideally you'd like when you're drafting a quarterback.
And in the Sun Bowl, the player you previously referenced, Solomon Thomas, was in his grill the entire game.
Oh, yeah, and then there were plenty of positives from that game from Trubisky and plenty of negatives. I think it showed both sides. It showed some of his inexperience reading defenses, but he's a very accurate quarterback from a physical standpoint, size, athleticism, arm strength, that's all there. I think when you see him, that offense that he's coming from, you see some whole field reads, moving left to right. He can do all those things that you want him to do at the NFL level. Now, would he benefit from sitting for a year? Yeah, just like most of these quarterbacks, especially a player who's 1 year of starting experience under his belt. But if there is a quarterback from this class that I would bet on being a capable starter that's going to help you win football games, I lean towards Mitchell Trubisky, and I do think that's why the Browns are considering him at the number one overall pick.
The college game is different than the pro game, and it's going to become more evident the next 5 years because so many people in college are running the spread. I think it's going to be very difficult for the NFL to evaluate quarterbacks. Just my opinion.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong at all. And it's already tough, so it's only going to get tougher.
Which then brings us to the Deshaun Watson question. Does he have he may not have had an NFL-style game at Clemson, but does he have something that can translate to the NFL?
I think so, and when you look at just the foundation traits that he possesses, he's a very smart guy. He has the arm to make all the throws, but when you watch him on film, he's not consistently making those throws from within the pocket. And in the NFL, you have to be able to win from within the pocket. Now, I mean, you can improvise, get outside the pocket, make some plays.
Exactly.
Aaron Rodgers does it, but
Roethlisberger early in his career, he made it. Sam Darnold will be the kind of guy you're talking about.
Right. To be a guy that's going to consistently win football games, at least that's what history has told us. Now, maybe there could be a quarterback that comes along, a Deshaun Watson, a Pat Mahomes, who, people thought Johnny Manziel would be that guy a couple of years ago, who really just, redefines how you play the position. And it kind of, it's a triple up effect. Talk about the different offenses that went from high school to college and now college to the NFL, different teams are going to buy into that. If you buy into, say, Patrick Mahomes, you're going to implement some of the things he did at Texas Tech into your offense in the NFL. You're not going to totally revamp your offense, but you're going to show a few things that's going to help him transition to the NFL game. These quarterbacks are really interesting. It's really the story of the first round. Quarterbacks, usually the story of the first round,
right,
but especially this year.
The running back component. Now, I felt strongly after seeing Zeke Elliott against Penn State a couple of times. Jack Ham and I both sat there and went, wow, right? Because he can catch, he can block, and of course run. There's no doubt I thought he was a top five pick. It's one of the few running backs that we've seen I thought was a top five pick in recent years. Legit. I don't see that in this group in Fournette, Cook, and McCaffrey. With Fournette, I see something that's missing. There's something missing with him. What do you see?
I'm absolutely in agreement. If Zeke was in this class, he would be the first running back drafted. I feel very strongly about that.
Easy.
Yeah, and with this running back group, you can poke holes in each one of them. I mean, they're each very, very talented. At Fournette, we don't see... Yeah, just from a physical perspective, the height, weight, speed, we don't see guys like this at the running back position. I mean, there's not a running back in today's NFL that even comes close to comparing to what Leonard Fournette brings with that speed-power combination at that size.
But Dane, when he got into a game that really, really mattered, he disappeared. When Zeke Elliott got into big games, he dominated the game.
Absolutely, and I think that goes to kind of my next point with the running back position. It's more than just the physical traits.
Yeah.
You have to have the vision, the run tempo,
right,
the patience, the ability to read your blocks and, you know, find that open space. And so that's something that I didn't see consistently from Fournette. I mean, you just Google Leonard Fournette and watch his best plays. They all come with a wide open lane. He's not consistently creating on his own. Now, he'll have some really impressive second level plays where he just shrugs off defenders. Sure. But in terms of creating on his own early at the line of scrimmage, you just don't see it consistently. And that's why, to me, Leonard Fournette in the top 10 doesn't make any sense, but I think there's a great chance it happens.
Now, of course, Dalvin Cook, I know there's been stories lately the Eagles really like him. I look at Christian McCaffrey, I see Darren Sproles.
I think that with McCaffrey, you have to be open-minded how you're going to use him, because I think he can be a featured back, but you have to kind of tweak your definition of what a featured back is. He's not going to carry the ball 25 times a game,
right.
But similar to what you're saying, I mean, he can touch the ball 20 to 25 times
right.
a game. My comparison I use is Brian Westbrook.
Okay,
I think
that's
he
fair.
Can, you know, a little undersized, 200, 205 pounds, you know, not the biggest guy, but he's tough, and I try not to exaggerate with these guys, but I really believe McCaffrey is the smartest runner I've evaluated, just with his understanding of, you know, where the developing holes are, his anticipation. He understands when the mission is over, and that's why, even though he's not the biggest guy, he doesn't take a lot of big hits because he really protects his body. So it's something that I do think with McCaffrey, I think he's going to be the second back drafted. I think in Philadelphia at 14, to me, that's the perfect fit for that offense, mm-hmm. helping a young quarterback. I think Coach Peterson would understand how to use a talent like that on offense.
Right.
And if I'm the rest of the NFC East, I would hate to see McCaffrey land up in Philly.
I have to ask you about Chris Godwin, out of Penn State. Went to the combine, ran a great time, a 4.42. In this puzzle, this multi-round puzzle, what do you see out of him, and where does he fit?
I think we're going to see him come off the board somewhere in round two.
Okay.
I think what you like most about Godwin is his ability to create a large strike zone for the quarterback. And of course, running the 4.42 40-yard dash at the combine certainly won't hurt. But his large catch radius, his ability down the field to make plays, it's just very natural the way he tracks and adjusts to the football. I think he can use a lot of work with, you know, his routes. He can use some work in terms of setting up defenders to create his own spacing. But he's very competitive when the ball's in the air. Really like the way that he's able to expand that catch radius and help out his quarterback. So I think with what he did at the combine, that pushed him into that somewhere in that late second round range.
I know in watching, obviously, go back to Ohio State, or even when he was the nickelback 2 years ago, I thought Lattimore was the best DB that Ohio State had. How do you look at Lattimore, Hooker, and Conley, and where they fit into the first round puzzle?
I think they're all three going to be off the board somewhere in the top 20 picks, which would give Ohio State three top 20 picks in back to back years, which I don't know if that's ever happened before. With Lattimore, you just don't see separation when you watch him on film with receivers. He's a very sticky corner, and that's so athletic. Sudden feet, the fluidity that he shows in his movements. And then when he does give up a little bit of space, he has that closing burst to make it up in a flash, make a play on the ball. So all three of these defensive backs are really impressive, and they're not going to have to wait long to hear their name called on draft night.
I have to ask you this last one, Dane, then I'll let you go. Thanks a lot for this has been a fun conversation. Give me a couple guys that you think have really good value that when this is all said and done, I mean, they don't have to be one of the first two picks or whatever, but a couple guys that you sense that there's real value in them once they do get picked.
I think when you look at like the first round players, they maybe go in the late first. T.J. Watt from Wisconsin.
Yeah.
You know, if his last name was Smith, you know, we still like him as much. I think so, because he's just he doesn't have an off switch, and I think he's still developing into the player he's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
At 6'4", 255 pounds. So I think he can be a steal in the late first round if that's where he ends up going.
Yeah.
One of my favorite players.
Really good edge rusher. I mean, he has good sense off the edge at that linebacking spot.
Right. And people forget he was a tight end when he arrived at Wisconsin. I mean, he's still learning and getting better. So I think there's a lot of There's a lot of upside there for him to get better.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite day two kind of gems is Adam Shaheen, the tight end from Ashland, Division II.
Mm-hmm.
Former basketball player, dominated Division II when he went to football. And it's hard to compare what he, you know, his game film against what he'll see in the NFL. But they just, you know, they don't make many Adam Shaheens where you're 6'6", 278 pounds, and you're running a 4.7. So, you know, he's one of the few, you know, tight ends that fits that traditional mold where, you know, he can line up in line, help you out as a blocker, but also help you out downfield. You know, you don't want to compare him to Gronk, you know, one of the best tight ends we've ever seen. But he's got a little bit of that to him. And when we look back at this draft, you know, 3-4 years from now, I think we'll be talking about Shaheen as one of the steals of the draft.
Thoroughly enjoyable. Thanks so much for great perspective. Everybody appreciated it very much.
Anytime. Thank you.
All right, Dane Brugler joining us to talk about the NFL draft. We will come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
Hey, guess what day it is?
Tuesday.
No, it's Hyundai. Remember? Hyundai.
Who are these guys?
Just listen. It's a Hyundai spring cleaning sales event going on right now at Sunbury Motors Hyundai. Hyundai. You're getting the lowest prices of the year without all the gimmicks or the fine print. Today, Hyundai.
Hyundai.
Save over $8,500 on a new 2017 Hyundai,
Hyundai
Sonata Limited, or save over $4,700 on a new 2017 Hyundai,
Hyundai
Elantra Limited. Save over $4,250 on a new Tucson Ultimate Limited. Over 80 new Hyundais available with big value with America's best warranty. 10 years, 100,000 miles. This sale is only for a limited time, so get your Hyundai today. Only at your home for Hyundai. Sunbury Motors Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. And online at sunburyhyundai.com, where today is Hyundai. Tax and tax extra, all rebates to dealer. Shop early for best selection. See dealer for complete details.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us on the show today, brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports Bozo of the Day. You might as well name this one yourself, Sean. It's pretty easy.
Starling Marseille. So,
exactly right.
Yep, yep.
Nandrolone is what he was caught in his system. Now, normally that is a drug that is injected. Although there is a different name for it that can be taken orally. This substance has been banned since 1974 in the Olympics. I mean, think about that. This has been a banned substance for 43 years in the Olympics. So it's been on a list for a long time of one form or another. Obviously, it's on the Major League Baseball list. But... now, the other part, though, is this. Naturally, they want to ask the war people, the wins above replacement, how much this affects the Pirates. And I told you I think it's going to affect them in 5 to 10 games because I think their margin of error is not that big. They claim, you know, I was telling Sean in the break, you know what the war people say? It's going to cost the Pirates one game. One game? And that's the part where I think that the inability to understand the game and try to break it down into numbers where they miss. Marte is a really good center fielder. There are going to be a couple of balls over the next 80 games and more than a couple that he might get to that other people can't. He might make a throw that other people can't make that he can. Steal a base that other people would get thrown out on. And then, of course, there's the hitting part of it. if you're on a team of depth, say, for example, you're the Chicago Cubs, they could afford last year to lose Kyle Schwarber and still get to the World Series. Then when they came to the World Series, he came back. But they could lose a Kyle Schwarber and get to the World Series. Now, Marte is a better player than Schwarber. But that tells you about the depth of the Cubs. The Pirates are in a different boat because their margin of error is so much thinner. Losing any player for any period of time among their core group is a blow, despite what the war people say. Now, a lot of stats are very useful that the sabermetrics people put out. And as you know, war to me is not one of them. I think it is a thoroughly, completely useless stat that does not take into account the actual skills it takes to play the game. There's so many, quote, little things that add up that metrics do not bring into play. Now, there are many stats that the sabermetrics people put out that I think are invaluable and a great way to look at the game. War is not one of them. War is a guess. That's wins above replacement. That's a guess. And if anybody wants to tell, oh, no, I've got a statistical formula. Really? Well, guess what? I've got eyeballs that's watched the game for 59 years. Okay? I can tell who's good and how much of a drop-off there is when I see somebody else play it. I don't need a number. Don't need a number. One of my favorites has always been the Miguel Cabrera, Mike Trout debate about MVP. The sabermetricians all told you, oh, Trout. Now, they won 76 games that year, the Angels. So what, without him, they'd win 66? Still finishing last? Really? Meanwhile, he won the Triple Crown. They made the playoffs. Sounds to me like he had the better year. Okay. Without him, they don't make the playoffs. Without Trout, the Angels still finish in last. All right. Let's bring in Neil Coolong now. A lot of emotion in Pittsburgh with the passing of Dan Rooney. Neil, welcome. Mr. Rooney was very special.
Yeah, it really is, and you almost feel bad for Art II, just in the shoes that he has to fill are basically unfillable. What stands out, I think, with the legacy of Dan Rooney is just the fact that he did reach that same status as his father, and he did it kind of in a different way, you know? He's going to be the one history is going to show that bridged the gap, really, from the traditional, very neighborhood-like Pittsburgh Steelers feel that the awe and aura that they have around here into the modern NFL. And some people are going to have issues with that, but that's a really rocky transition. And for one guy to have been there from the very beginning when he was very young, keep that in mind, but when he took over operational control of the team, he wasn't very old. Putting that into toward the end of his career, when you have free agency popped up in that time, you had the salary cap pop up in that time, there are a lot of massive obstacles historically. And it's a changing business environment. It always has been. The fact that he was able to navigate all of that with the same level of charm and dignity that the Rooney family is known for, it's remarkable. I don't think such a feat could be accomplished, but he's truly a special guy.
It's interesting. Certain people, when they pass, you don't hear a negative word about, and you sense that no matter what side of the spectrum you're on, and the NFL is filled with several spectrums, he was universally respected.
Yeah, he's the true definition of a collaborator. He was somebody that built consensus as second nature. That is such a difficult skill. And really, at the root of it, and this is what they're really known for, it's humility. They weren't flashy people. They didn't put other people down. They were just always very humble and proud of who they are and where they came from. You know, I'm speaking in past tense for some reason, but the family itself is a fixture in Pittsburgh, and it always will be. You know, I was reading somebody that said it really simply. Dan Rooney in Pittsburgh was royalty. Mm-hmm. If there was a king, he would have been it, you know? And it's not like he would have taken extra pride with such a distinction. You know, he didn't live his life that way. And it really just, we're not going to see another one like him, you know, yeah. Anywhere. It's special for me being from Pittsburgh that, you know, that such a man left such an indelible footprint on a city like this one, but we'll never see it again. I think everybody lost something, really.
Someone who could have owned the city if he wanted, but didn't have the ego to do it. Pretty special. Let's get to the Steelers now with the draft coming up. So what you got here? When you play this thing out, you know, what do you think they're going to do?
You know, I'm reading a lot about Carl Lawson. That makes some functional sense.
I love that. That makes some functional sense. That's great.
Yeah, and all it really says is that they haven't yet found an edge rusher that that's really worth it, and certainly isn't for lack of trying. You know, you can go back to Lamar Woodley. You've got Jason World. You kept James Harrison around. How it is he's still going is beyond me, and that might come up again this season. Let's keep that in mind. Jarvis Jones obviously didn't pan out. Really, what it comes down to for the Steelers is a dramatic shift in, you know, opposing philosophy. There used to be a time that Joey Porter was a third-round draft pick. Now, Jarvis Jones is the 17th overall pick. That position is so highly coveted, and what they did back in the early to mid-90s was so unlike what everybody else was doing. They had their pick of the litter. You know, you have so many very, very question-riddled edge rushing prospects that are going to be top five, top six picks, because you have to have that freak athletic outside edge rusher if you're going to generate pressure. And because of that, the Steelers haven't been able to feast in the middle rounds on those positions. You know, there was a time, Jason Gilton, I think, was a third round pick or something like that.
Right.
He turned in not long after that to Chris Carter. I don't know if you remember Chris Carter. He was the 5'11 edge rusher that they drafted, I think, in the fifth round out of Utah a few years ago. I remember the one real significant stretch of action that Carter got. He was going up against Nate Sauder of the Patriots. I think Sauder was a rookie that year, and literally looked like Carter was bouncing off his older brother's fist. He had absolutely no ability on the field at all. He got nowhere close to the quarterback. The Steelers have to find that dominant player, and it's going to be really hard to do with a 30th overall pick. But if it's a guy like Lawson, who I think is kind of a project, he's got a bit of an injury history. If a guy like that is available, they're running to the podium to turn in that card, because, you know, a player like that with that kind of ability at 30 would be an absolute steal.
Yeah, obviously, there are mock drafts left and right. I saw one mock draft that had them taking at 30 DeShone Kizer. And I sat back and went, I don't see that at all.
That seems weird. I don't envision him being there at 30, but if he is, he's going to go a lot further than 30. Something will probably come up by that point. But he's got more talent than that. He, you know, outside of the edge rusher, the quarterback position is the one that's going to get drafted way higher than you know, the value of the player at that pick, simply because if you don't have a quarterback, you're not going to win. He's got enough, I think, for a team that might be in kind of a precarious quarterback situation to want to take him in the first round. And that there are enough of those teams out there right now to make you think that a player like that isn't, you know, he's not going to fall that far. If he does, if he's on the board, the Steelers are trading. I guarantee you that. They're not going to take a quarterback at 30.
Right. But you know what? But rounds 3 through 5 have been really good for the Steelers over the years. In those rounds 3 through 5, where they can potentially make some hay with some guys that can be 4 to 7 year players in the league, is that the part that you're looking at where they can come up with another DB, another linebacker, another defensive lineman?
Yeah, that's really the root of a successful team, is your ability to find quality talent in the middle rounds. And it's not going to be talent that you're going to necessarily see immediately jumping off the film. And they're certainly not going to be the high-level elite athletes. While I say that and look back in the defensive secondary, you're talking about Shamarco Thomas, who was an athletic freak that just, you know, for whatever reason, never learned how to play the game of football.
Yeah.
But you can find, players that you can develop within your system. They're probably not going to be day one difference-making kinds of players, but the more, you know, the more Martavis Bryant you're able to kind of take a gamble on, and if, you know, assuming he gets reinstated and kind of straightened himself up, obviously a huge value pick for the Steelers, even if he did miss the season. When you were talking, it made me think, for whatever reason, of Wesley Johnson, a player that just got an extension with the Jets. The mm-hmm. Steelers have let go. He was a fifth-round pick. Perhaps didn't fit in as well to the Steelers scheme as they would have liked, but he's a starter in the NFL with the Jets. I mean, that says something about the value that you can find in those middle round with those picks. So more than anything, they've got to be able to find guys that can contribute. And I was just talking with somebody about the 2013 draft, which I remember labeling at the time the character draft. They had the high character guys that they took in that season, ironically, with the exception of Le'Veon Bell, who's been suspended twice. Jarvis Jones was a high character guy, very likable guy. Landry Jones, another, high character, spiritual leader type of locker room leader type of guy. Shamarco, again, Marcus Wheaton. It really seemed like they were trying to get back to a fundamental high character type of team. And those players didn't really pan out at all, with the exception of Bell, the one that keeps getting in trouble. So it's definitely a balancing act of who you're going to find and how they're going to fit your team. But the better that you can do, and you're right, the Steelers have done pretty well in the middle round as of late. The better they can do, then the stronger the team is going to be, more so in the future than now.
Your personal opinion, if I give you Harrison, Missouri, Lawson of Auburn, or then let's go outside linebacker Watt of Wisconsin, which one of those three would appeal to you?
I would think Watt immediately, but I'll probably recuse myself just in saying that it's really hard to get away from the allure of what his brother turned into.
Mm-hmm.
He's definitely not his brother. I think the level of credit he gets for his athleticism, I think, is a little bit overblown. He doesn't really look that athletic on tape. I mean, certainly, he's a top 50 pick in this draft.
Let me put it this way. On the game-winning play when Penn State beat Wisconsin, and they ran the wheel route to Barkley, Jack Ham and I were very pleased to see that matchup one-on-one, because he destroyed him on that play.
Yeah, it's stuff like that. And for people saying that he has all this, incredible athletic potential, I'm not seeing it on tape to make that kind of argument. And just to use a current reference point, if you watch Ryan Shazier in college, that's an athlete.
Yes.
You saw that guy moving at a speed that nobody else was even close to. I mean, he was unreal.
Completely agree.
Watt is not even close to that. He's not close to his brother. He doesn't have the size of his brother either. But there is something that draws me back to him. Lawson, I don't see, that he's probably got the same problem, if not more so. He's not the quick twitch athlete that I would really want at that position if I'm drafting 30th overall. I'd happily take either one of them in the second round, but for the first round pick, that premium pick, I need somebody with a little bit more athleticism.
I'd take Taco Charlton before I would take Watt. That's just me.
Yeah, there are a lot of people that are saying that too. You're starting to hear his name creep up a bit more.
Yeah. Pleasure, Neil. Look forward to talking to you next week. Always enjoy it.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
Neil Coulong, USA Today. We'll wrap it up in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. Motors Lincoln continues to satisfy the most discerning buyer by making American luxury affordable. If you're looking for a mid-sized SUV, the Lincoln MKX has to be on your list. Sunbury Motors Lincoln has the 2017 Lincoln MKX all-wheel drive starting at $38,016 after $1,000 retail premium bonus cash. Plus, well-qualified buyers can get 0% financing for 60 months with Lincoln Automotive Financial Services. You can choose from 12 MKXs in stock now. Sunbury Motors Lincoln has 5 2017 Lincoln Continentals in stock, ready for the test drive of your life. The 2017 Continental won the coveted 2017 AutoGuide.com Reader's Choice Luxury Car of the Year Award. Sunbury Motors has a 2017 Continental with an MSRP of $48,315, discounted to $46,315. Now is the time to see why more people are realizing they can move up to a brand new Lincoln from Sunbury Motors Lincoln in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. great to have you with us. The funeral of Dan Rooney today. You want to talk about the spectrum. The people of Pittsburgh, fans were there. Jack Hamm, Joe Green, Mel Blunt, Franco Harris, Ben Roethlisberger, Antonio Brown. I mean, just a wide spectrum of players were there. Former Commissioner Paul Tagliabue, current Commissioner Roger Goodell was there. Former President Barack Obama was there, along with former Attorney General Eric Holder, former Secretary of State John Kerry, all at the funeral of Dan Rooney today. This is the kind of person Dan Rooney was. And this is outside of sports now. Let's get outside of sports for a moment. He is the only U.S. ambassador to Ireland to ever have visited personally all 32 counties in Ireland. Do you realize that? In the history of those that we have sent to be an ambassador to Ireland, he is the only ambassador to have visited all 32 counties because he wanted to promote harmony within the country, have people talk to one another. When I was in Ireland 2.5, almost 3 years ago, the number of people, because, I mean, Dan Rooney was a part of what was going on. He was no longer, I think he stopped being ambassador to Ireland in 2012. But the number of people there who talked in glowing, loving terms about him from Ireland was remarkable. And when he went to present the trophy after the game, the ovation within the stadium for him showed how special he was to the Penn State fans, Pennsylvania fans, Central Florida fans, and the fan from Ireland. They loved him. But when you go someplace and you make it a personal point to visit everywhere because you think everyone's important, everyone ends up feeling important. And that's what Dan Rooney did. That's what he did. Only a Dan Rooney brings that kind of cross-section of people who want to be there. From politics to sports to a fan base. Dan Rooney had the ability to be extremely important, but also understand the common man touch. That's what a lack of ego does. You can accomplish great things without an ego and be a common man yourself.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.